There are times when we must risk our careers in favor of our principles. Now is such a time.
A GOP senator has strong words about the party's direction, but Alaska's delegation takes a softer approach. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, October 25th. Good evening, I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, public testimony on crime legislation in Juneau.
Me and my family have to endure this monster and horror of her murder every 2 years until parole is granted.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you that winter is almost here, and that means higher energy bills. On October 25th, AHFC is offering Secrets and Science of Energy Efficiency, a free class about the value of energy improvements at home. Learn best practices and money-saving tips. Learn more and register at Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's website at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
Yesterday afternoon, two Republicans rocked the U.S. Senate with harsh criticism of President Trump for what they call flagrant disregard for truth and debasing the nation. One even sounded a call to arms from the Senate floor while announcing he won't run for re-election. So far, Alaska's two senators aren't engaging on the issue, as Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Tuesday was not a normal day in the Senate. Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee essentially called the president, the chief of his own party, a serial liar and a danger to the country. Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona took to the floor to, among other things, call on senators to stand up to Trump, even if it means alienating Republican voters back home.
We're not here simply to mark time. Sustained incumbency is certainly not the point of seeking office. And there are times when we must risk our careers in favor of our principles. Now is such a time.
Flake says senators should think about how they'll answer when the next generation asks, "Why didn't you do something?" He didn't say it, but it was clear Flake was talking about the danger he sees in not putting the brakes on President Trump. A day later, most Republican senators aren't embracing Flake's message, at least not publicly. Senator Lisa Murkowski hasn't issued a statement on the matter. Her tweets included a happy birthday to the United Nations, a notation of her support for disaster relief, and a news story about a seal on the runway at Utqiagvik. Her spokeswoman said she had no time for an interview on the subject of the president's Republican critics, but says Murkowski respects Flake and Corker. Senator Dan Sullivan didn't issue public statements either, though he too tweeted about the seal on the runway. When asked, Sullivan chalked up Corker's remarks to a feud.
Senator Corker says the president has great difficulty with the truth. Is he wrong about that?
Look, I don't want to get involved with the, ongoing dispute between Senator Corker and the president.
As for heeding Senator Flake's call to arms, Sullivan says he didn't listen to the speech. He was chairing a subcommittee meeting. But Sullivan says he does call out the Trump administration on policies he thinks are wrong.
And I don't support the tweets. I don't think they're helpful, particularly on foreign policy. And the insults, I have been saying that for months.
The Alaska senators spoke up to criticize candidate Trump last year. Both Sullivan and Murkowski called for Trump to quit the race after the Access Hollywood tape emerged in which Trump bragged about grabbing women by the genitals. Sullivan started his Senate career as a more persistent critic of the president, though at the time it was Democrat Barack Obama. Sullivan says that's because Obama's policies were bad for Alaska, and he shut down access to natural resources.
When this new administration is actually trying to help us, trying to reverse a lot of that, I want to be as supportive as possible, particularly when we're a state that's in a recession right now.
Alaska's senators will no doubt have other opportunities to weigh in on their colleagues' criticism of the president. Both Corker and Flake have announced they're not running for re-election, but they'll remain in office until January 2019. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Trump administration is making much more land in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, available for oil exploration this year. Today, the Bureau of Land Management announced all 900 tracts set aside for leasing will be up for bid. That compares to just 145 tracts offered last year. It's the largest lease sale ever in the National Petroleum Reserve. In the past, BLM decided which tracts to offer based on industry interest. But this year, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke signed an order telling BLM to maximize the amount of land available for leasing. Still, just under half of the Indiana-sized reserve won't be available at this year's sale. The Obama administration decided to protect that land because it contained important bird and caribou habitat. The Trump administration is currently reviewing that decision. The National Petroleum Reserve is seeing a spike in interest from the oil industry. There was a big increase in bids at last year's BLM lease sale, spurred by a series of major oil discoveries around the northeast part of the reserve. This year's lease sale will be held on December 6th. Lawmakers got some good news in Juneau this afternoon as the state's Department of Natural Resources unveiled the fall production forecast. Oil production is up, and they expect it to rise again next year. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney reports.
2016 was a difficult year on the North Slope. After the drop in oil prices, operators cut 44% of their spending. They let drilling rigs go idle and laid off hundreds of workers. That's why, at Alaska's Division of Oil and Gas, Ed King says they were surprised when they started putting together this year's production forecast.
When we read the news about rigs getting laid down and kind of this global contraction of the industry, you know, we kind of expected that to manifest itself in reduced production. So, yeah, it is a little bit surprising to see how much they've been able to do in this low price environment.
So production is up for the year, and the state is predicting that it's going to be up next year, too. King says a big part of that prediction is coming from the oil companies.
You know, last year they told us, the Prudhoe Bay operator, at least, they told us that they were expecting to be able to hold production relatively flat. And we were a little bit skeptical. And, you know, this year they told us the same thing. And now we have a tendency to want to believe them a little bit more.
BP operates Prudhoe Bay. And this isn't new oil. At least, it's not coming from new fields. ConocoPhillips brought another portion of its Colville River oil field online, and that increased production some. But the increases mostly came from places like Prudhoe Bay. King says the oil companies trimmed operations, cut costs, and found ways to squeeze oil out of old fields.
A lot of it is just facility optimization and just management of the resources, and that's really something that they weren't paying as much attention to, I think, when they were out there trying to spend money funding new places to drill in new oil. Now they're focused more on the assets that they do have and getting the most out of them.
In some older fields, operators drilled new wells. In others, King says fracking brought more oil out of the ground. And Hilcorp took over three of the fields that contributed to the uptick in production. The company's business model is to take over old fields and find ways to get new oil out of them. But it's not all good news. Alaska's Department of Revenue also put out a forecast today. This one, an early look at oil prices. Analysts are saying that oil prices won't increase as quickly as they previously thought. They predict oil won't climb to $75 per barrel until 2027. And they attribute most of that increase to inflation. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rasha McChesney in Juneau.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, how an Athabascan mountaineer helped in the first ascent of Denali.
He carved steps, a 3-mile-long jumble of ice blocks.
That is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Raven Alaska, committed to customer safety and satisfaction, reminding Alaska that now is a great time to fly. Learn more at flyravn.com. And by ExxonMobil Alaska, their financial investment and partnership with local companies at Point Thompson helps contribute to Alaska's economy and jobs for Alaskans. ExxonMobil, energy lives here.
Many Alaskans are calling for the repeal of last year's criminal justice overhaul. Others want the law to be given more time. The legislature is trying to follow a middle path, which may leave many dissatisfied. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on public testimony on a proposed bill.
Alaskans disturbed about rising crime are focusing their anger on a law passed more than a year ago, Senate Bill 91. The law was the subject of intense testimony on Tuesday night. Sherry Miller from Eagle River says she's concerned the law will repeatedly require her family to confront David Joseph Thomas. He killed her daughter, Linda Bauer, 3 years ago.
If he is denied parole, this murderer gets an automatic parole hearing every 2 years until granted. This means that me and my family have to endure this monster and horror of her murder every 2 years until parole is granted.
Most people who spoke during more than 3 hours of public testimony expressed concern about Senate Bill 91. Anchorage resident Leonard Martin says his cousin Gregory Gill was killed in September by a man who had committed earlier offenses. Martin says these offenses should have led to tougher penalties than the new law allows.
I urge you to repeal SB 91 and take SB 54 off the table until we can put facilities in place to do the treatment and the rehabilitation. You got the cart ahead of the horse on this, guys.
But while lawmakers are looking to make changes to SB 91, the majority are unlikely to support the repeal of the law. Instead, the debate is focusing on Senate Bill 54, a measure that would make limited changes to the law. It would increase the penalties for those who commit Class C felonies and petty thefts, as well as those who violate their conditions of release. Some members of the public are cautioning lawmakers against acting too quickly to reverse Senate Bill 91. They say the reductions in jail time under the law are providing savings that will fund treatment and other services for offenders. They say these services will reduce the number of repeat offenders. Ketchikan resident Christine Fury says she struggled with addiction and that substance abuse led to the early deaths of her sister and her best friend. She says she doesn't want to see the law repealed.
It's like you guys are dangling a way out in front of our faces just to rip it away without giving us a chance, without giving the people that have supported these bills a chance.
And police chiefs who spoke during the hearing supported passing SB 54. Soldotna Police Chief Peter Mlynarek says the legislature should take several steps to support police. He says it should begin by passing SB 54 and increasing funding for public safety. Then it should take more actions.
Fulfill the promises of SB 91, so fund drug and alcohol rehabilitation programs. Place statutory limitation on releasing repeat offenders on their own recognizance. Restore the bail schedule and enable courts to sanction those who pay fines and restitution.
The House Judiciary Committee debated amendments to Senate Bill 54 today. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Congress can now deny the U.S. Forest Service's move to transition away from old-growth logging in the Tongass National Forest. Conservationists and timber industry groups throughout the Forest Service thought the Forest Service's decision was finalized last year, but a letter submitted by Senator Lisa Murkowski prompted the Government Accountability Office to look into it. The office determined on Monday that Congress can review the Forest Service's decision, so now the agency must abide by their old plan until Congress reaches an agreement. Owen Graham, the executive director at the Alaska Forest Association, says it's a step in the right direction.
I've been working hard trying to persuade people to rescind it or reject it or withdraw it or choke it to death or something, get rid of it, but because it's going to literally put our industry completely out of business.
Timber industry groups like Graham's were worried the Forest Service wouldn't make enough young growth trees available as the agency moved away from selling valuable old growth. Meredith Trainer from the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council says she didn't agree with everything in the plan. She thought it left too much old growth on the table. But for conservationists, there were also some substantial wins. Trainer says when she heard that Congress can decide the Tongass's fate,
you know, my heart sank a little. We hope that Senator Murkowski won't use her position to attack the Tongass Land Management Plan amendment.
In a written statement, Murkowski praised the Government Accountability Office's decision. Congress now has 60 days to decide whether to step in to deny the Forest Service plan. A panel discussion tonight in Fairbanks examines the short life of the first person to summit Denali. Walter Harper was an Athabascan guide and mountaineer who played a critical role in the 1913 expedition that climbed to the top of North America's tallest peak. KUAC's Robert Hannon reports.
Mary Erlander is the author of a new book on Walter Harper, and she says it was his subsistence skills that brought him to the attention of Episcopal missionary Hudson Stuck. She says Harper had been raised by his mother in the Athabascan tradition, and even at 16, Harper exhibited determination, skill, and judgment, whether in school or at fish camp and hunting.
He had been performing so well and showing so much talent and potential that Hudson Stuck offered him the job of being his riverboat pilot and trail guide.
Stuck and Harper developed a sort of father-son bond of affection. That bond and Harper's skill ensured his place on the expedition that would make history. Erlander says Stuck also wisely secured the experienced climber and guide Harry Karsten to co-lead. Erlander says without Harper and Karsten's, it's doubtful the venture would have succeeded.
It was mainly Harry Karsten's and Walter Harper who carved steps, a 3-mile-long jumble of ice blocks over the ridge that was the pathway to the summit.
Erlander says it was Harper's youth and stamina that put him at the head of the expedition when it made its final push to the top of Denali. 5 years later, in the fall of 1918, Walter Harper's future seemed bright. At 25, he'd been accepted into medical school and married Frances Wells, a missionary nurse serving in Fort Yukon. The newlyweds boarded the ill-fated Princess Sophia, heading back east. On October 25th, the ship went down in Lynn Canal, claiming all aboard. Erlander says it was a terrible loss.
Because he navigated so comfortably in both his traditional Athabascan world and the Western culture, had he lived, he would have been a great leader.
Tonight's panel discussion on Walter Harper begins at 7 p.m. at Raven Landing. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds, narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
As was mentioned earlier in the newscast, an airport at the northernmost point of the state saw a surprising obstacle on its runway Monday. It happened in Utqiagvik, where a seal, estimated to weigh 450 pounds, had to be removed from the airport runway on a sled. A photo and video of the bearded seal lounging on the runway was shared on Facebook. The State Department of Transportation got in on the fun by warning pilots of a low ceiling at the airport. Meadow Bailey, the department's communications director, says Utqiagvik experienced heavy storms Monday. Staff found the seal while clearing the runway. It was removed by the North Slope Animal Control. A new streaming radio channel aims to give young Indigenous musicians and artists a voice on broadcast radio. RIVR, an acronym for Rising Indigenous Voices Radio, launched at the end of September and streams 24/7 to provide a unique playlist from the top 40 hits to podcasts of Native American food bloggers. Alaska Public Media's Samantha Davenport has more.
Here's a song you might hear on RIVR Radio. That's a tribe called Red's Trek, called Scylla, featuring Tanya Tagak. James Domick Jr. is spearheading the radio project for Kuwanic Broadcast Corporation. Domick wants to include American Indian and Alaska Native millennials in the project that revolves around their culture.
I think that Native people in general, through media, we have in the past really have seen ourselves as mascots, have seen ourselves as vilified. I think the time is now, I think, for us to just have our own voice on our terms.
Domick's background is in music and film. He played drums in the indie group, the Whipsaws, and tribal funk group, Bamiwa, before being hired on by Kuwanic. Since then, Domic has been the sole visionary for the online channel and the one-man band for River. Domic was brought on board about a year and a half ago. When he was hired, there was no name or website for the project, only a vision. Finding Indigenous musicians can be a challenge, and Domic has to oftentimes dig for new content. Domic, who is half Inupiaq, was born and raised in Kotzebue. He thinks the way television has portrayed Native Americans is disparaging.
It's important that Native young people hear themselves and see themselves in media, and I think that's the direction that the river is going to head, where the content will be produced by the demographic itself, and so that they hear themselves on the product, on the station. And I think just reestablishing a sense of identity.
Currently, a good amount of musicians, rappers, and DJs occupy River's airtime, but Domic hopes to eventually air speeches by inspirational Native Americans or comedy bits. River can be heard at theriver.net. In Anchorage, I'm Samantha Davenport.
The National Park Service is considering fee increases at 17 parks, including Denali. Higher entry fees would be in effect during peak season, or the busiest 5 months, starting May 1st. An NPS press release announcing the proposal says additional money raised would be used to address aging infrastructure at the popular parks, which also include Glacier, Yellowstone, and Yosemite. Denali National Park spokeswoman Catherine Belcher says under the proposal, the Denali entry fee would jump threefold.
The current fees here in Denali are $10 per person. Under the new proposal, that would go up to $30 per person.
Denali season passes would jump from $40 to $75 under the proposal, but a nationwide annual park pass would remain $80. Kids are not charged fees, and there are special passes available for seniors and veterans. At Denali, where visitation tops 500,000 people annually, the fee increase could bring in an additional several million dollars a year. Money, Belcher says, would help pay for deferred maintenance.
At last check, our maintenance backlog was between $51 and $53 million.
Belcher says 80% of fees are retained by individual parks, with the remainder going into a national pool for distribution to parks around the country. Under the proposal, permit fees for tour operators would also be adjusted upwards at the 17 parks. The National Park Service is taking public comment on the fee increase through November 23rd. When there's a meeting on the Kuskokwim concerning fish or wildlife, Tuntutuliak Elder James Charles is at the table. He's been at the table for decades, kindly looking at managers over his glasses, offering a guiding voice. At the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service recognized Charles as a conservation hero. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur has the story.
Greg Sikanik, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Alaska Regional Supervisor, easily characterized what James Charles has meant to co-management as he took the AFN stage to present the award.
Thank you for showing us how to be better partners, James.
James Charles is 77 years old. He served on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council, the Fish and Game Advisory Council, the Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group, and the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fisheries Commission. His partnership spans more than half a century, often in uncompensated positions. The person who taught Charles the importance of partnership was his mother. He can still hear her voice.
Keep going until you can't do it anymore.
His mother taught him these lessons after they endured one of the most traumatic events in Alaska's history, the TB epidemic of the 1950s.
My father, uncle, grandmother all died from tuberculosis in the same winter.
James' mother and two younger siblings survived. He was 8 years old at the time. The community of Tuntutuliak took care of them, with people sharing their catches.
community was a community those years. They were helping everybody in the town.
That long winter, it was Charles' uncle who taught him how to weave fishnets from twine to prepare for the coming summer, each mesh a different size for a different fish.
Using our fingers, not numbers.
The tip of the thumb to the tip of the hand for king salmon, smaller for chum. Charles says his community of a few dozen people didn't have hospitals, medicine, or stores. What they had was the land and the river. They also didn't have fishing and hunting regulations. Instead, they had elders. But as time passed, the river's population grew, technology advanced, government strengthened, and so did the rules governing fishing and hunting. And James Charles also grew, working for the Bureau of Indian Affairs and later the Lower Kuskokwim School District, serving in the Army National Guard and flying as a bush pilot. All the while, he helped guide the decision-making behind fishing and hunting regulations. As an example of what his guidance looks like, Charles and Tuntutuliak supported restricting fishing on the Kuskokwim during the recent summers of low king salmon runs.
I come from the mouth of Kuskokwim, and I have to think of people upriver too, so they can have salmon.
As Charles is helping to guide the management of the river, he is also being guided by the lessons learned from his mother, his uncle, and his community through that terrible winter of loss and generosity. Reporting in Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Elizabeth Harbaugh and Samantha Davenport in Anchorage, Rasha McChesney, Elizabeth Jenkins and Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Robert Hannon and Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. Casey Grove and Annie Fite produced tonight's show. And I'm Zachariah Hughes. Have a good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting.
And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers student and family education loans with interest rates lower than the federal plus, and they can be used at college and training programs in or outside of Alaska. Get more information at 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.